welcome back to, I guess, episode 2 of the Gladstone AI podcast. We're talking about the latest AI systems, the latest AI models that have come out that are defining the frontier today of AI and breaking them down into plain English so that everybody can understand their implications for things like procurement, for things like the malicious applications that they can power, for things like the accident risks that they introduce, basically the concrete real-world implications of what's happening at the cutting edge of AI today, because those concrete implications really are multiplying. Like, the cutting edge of AI today matters to everyday people in a way that it just did not 3 years ago. And I think the system that we'll be talking about today is going to be a great example of that. Ed, welcome to the podcast. Welcome again. No, welcome, actually. You weren't on the first episode. That was just me talking into a mic. So welcome for the first time to your own podcast, Ed. How's it going?
Thanks. It's great to be here. Yeah, it's going great. Looking forward to it.
All right. So for context, Ed is the mind behind AItracker.org. He does basically the frontier AI tracking. He researches the latest AI advances and kind of grabs onto, okay, you know, this is significant, this is maybe less significant. He's the source of all the triage and kind of analysis that we do on the back end at Gladstone. So, Ed, what model or what system are we talking about today?
So today we're going to discuss something that came out relatively recently out of Google called language model self-improvement, which is where you take an AI model that can already do a good job of generating language, and you find a way to actually make it improve itself without actually needing any external data. So basically, you can get it to think for itself and improve itself that way.
And so what this makes me think of, you know, is like humans, right? We can write text. Like, I can write you a text, I can write an email, whatever. But we do have this capacity, like, without doing any additional research, without taking in fresh data, without reading more books or whatever, news articles, like, I can sit on my own and I can come up with new ideas. I can realize, like, oh, that thing that I'm working on, that's actually a bad idea. Let's not do that. Let's change our strategy. So there's something about the level of knowledge that I have about the world that kind of like crosses some critical threshold where now I'm actually able to use that knowledge to improve my own knowledge in a way. So when you first introduced this whole concept to me, that's what it roughly sounded like, but for text generation systems, for language models, as you say. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly right. In fact, there's even a deeper way to think about it, which is like, so when you think about, you know, doing that yourself, right? You kind of think about your own thoughts. You're like, oh, you know, should I, like, or if you think about like a simple question, like Tommy has 6 apples, Jill has 4 apples. How many apples in total do Tommy and Jill both have, right? Well,
right.
You can like think for yourself and like sit and think. And the more you sit and think, the better you're likely to do a job of answering a question like that. Whereas on the other hand, if I ask you a question like, what's the capital of Mongolia? And if you don't know right away, well, doesn't matter how long you sit and think, you're not going to just like magic the answer into your own head of knowing the capital of Mongolia. And so there's kind of two different
kinds. It's like a pure recall question.
Yeah.
Right? There's no like logic.
That's right. It's like, you know, there's a piece of your answer that comes from knowledge that you have about the world. And there's a piece of your answer that comes from like actual logic and reasoning that you do. And generally when we have conversations, when we have like logical discussions, it's a combination of those two things. You're combining knowledge you have about the world with like logical reasoning that you've done. But in this case, they focus on the logical reasoning piece. And so the questions that they tested this model on were not, you know, capital of Mongolia type questions. Instead, they were
right.
Like, number of apples, like adding, like what is the tip for this like restaurant bill kind of questions, things where you actually, it is all about reasoning. And so you would expect that at least with a person thinking through it, they would do a better job if they sat and thought for a little while.
Okay. So, and I'm going to go ahead and recommend that anybody who hasn't listened to the first episode that we did, which was all about how language models, how these text generation AIs actually work and kind of like where they fit into the ecosystem of AI more generally. Like, go check that out just because that's going to give you a bit of a sense of like, you know, what these systems can do and why they work the way they do. But Ed, I'm curious, like, what is, so what is the result here? Like, how does this work? Like, how are they getting these AI systems to do this kind of thinking for themselves? And then, like, what are the results? Like, how well does it work?
Yeah. So backing up a little bit here, the kinds of models that they're looking at are basically extremely sophisticated autocompletes. So what happens is you give this model, like, an initial string of text, and it will complete that text as best it can, very, very intelligently. And so that text, it tends to be text that it has, like, looked at on the internet. And so when you give it a prompt that sounds like a question you would see on Reddit, it's going to respond with answers of the kind that it would see on Reddit, because it kind of thinks that you're on Reddit and you're asking a question, so it'll hallucinate, like, the answer.
It's like if I'm texting you, right? Like, if I write you a text and I have a bunch of, like, typos or something in my text, it's going to go, oh, like, the next word I'm going to recommend might be a word with typos in it, because, like, oh, this is a person who writes with typos. My only job is to do autocomplete to predict the next word they're going to write. And so therefore, you know, that's what I, or if I write as if I'm, like, ESL or something, like, it'll fill. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It expects the typos. And so it will complete with typos. But what that means is that you can manipulate those expectations to actually ask it questions in a way that makes it more likely to give the right answer.
Maybe this is a good place to start with this. Like, how does a text generating AI even, like, how does an autocomplete AI like this give you an answer to a question? So, like, I have a question that I want my AI to answer for me. Like, why does it, how does it know to answer it? If that makes sense.
Yeah. The truth is, it doesn't know to answer the question. Sometimes if you give it a question, it will just be like, oh, I'm supposed to give a list of questions. So if you give it a question, sometimes it will just be like, it will just give you a bunch of other questions, because it thinks that it's just supposed to give a list of questions. And so what you kind of do is, in terms of dressing up the question to make it more likely to give an answer, you have to kind of try to pretend and imagine, like, that question fits in somewhere on the internet where what follows of the question is a correct answer. So, for example, you give it a question like, you know, Bob has 6 apples, Alice has 4 apples. How many apples do the two of them have? And if you write that and you then write the correct answer in like your text box, and then you write another question underneath that, the AI will look at the first question, the first answer, and then the second question, and it will kind of pattern match, and it will be like, oh, okay, I'm supposed to give a good answer to this question. And so it will go and generate that answer.
Like, in other words, so it's kind of extrapolating then. It's going like, okay, this text that I've been fed, that I need to add more words to, that I need to do autocomplete on, like, it's clearly coming from some document that has a format where it's like question and then question and then answer and then the answer and then question and then another question and then answer and then the other answer. So you're giving it kind of more of a hint, I guess, about what it needs to be producing. Okay. And so how does this then tie into, you know, like, this kind of breakthrough that you're talking about here? Like, what's the connection to self-improvement?
Yeah. So it turns out you can make these models do a better job and be more likely to give the correct answer if you add almost like a special magic spell to this question. And that magic spell is literally the words, let's think through this step by step. So in other words, the question you give to the model is, Alice has 6 apples, Bob has 4 apples, how many apples do the two of them have? ? Let's think through this step by step, period. Your model looks at that question and let's think through this step by step. And it's much more likely, once it sees the let's think through step by step, it's much more likely to give not just like the answer is 10, but to go like, well, Alice has 6 apples, Bob has 4 apples. 6 + 4 = 10. Alice and Bob together have 10 apples. So a little bit of a more expansive reasoning process. And it turns out that when the model is explicit about reasoning out its answers, it is actually much better at answering logic type questions.
Is this because you know, if you were to go on some random website, so these language models, they're trained on like all the text on the internet. They've read a ton of blog posts, a ton of like math tutorials, logic tutorials, and school assignments, that sort of thing. And if they see a question that's like, you know, so-and-so has this many apples, blah, blah, like that kind of question, and it's followed by an answer that begins with, let's think about this step by step. Usually, if you see that on the internet, like your guess would be that the next words would be a very logical and reasoned argument. So is that what it's kind of catching on to? It's going like, oh, okay, like the document that I'm trying to autocomplete is most likely going to be a logical kind of logically structured thing for that reason?
Exactly that. And it doesn't always give you the same logical chain of reasoning. It might, you know, it might give like one explanation for the answer, different explanation for the answer, a third explanation for the answer. You can imagine, you know, you can imagine doing this like 100 times, right? On the same question, yeah. Seeing like what are the logical explanations. And it will not always 100% of the time, especially for hard questions, it won't even always get the right answer, right? Like in some cases, you'll see the model go like, well, Alice has, you know, six apples. Bob has four apples. Six minus four equals two, so the total is two apples. And it just kind of like misread it and it made a mistake. So you actually, you know, it's not going to get the answer right all the time, but you kind of hope that most of the time, if you run the same process 100 times, well, not only is it going to get the right answer most of the time, but asking it to reason out actually makes it more likely that the most common answer out of those 100 times is the right answer.
Okay, so basically you're giving your autocomplete system all the hints that you possibly can that the text that it's being asked to complete, that the next most likely words are going to be logical and useful. Okay, I'm with you. So still waiting for the connection here to like self-improvement. So how do we get from this idea of like hinting at the model that like, hey, you know, like this is text taken from a super logical and helpful and well-reasoned document. How do we get from that to now the model's making itself better?
Yeah, so that's actually part of why you ask it the question 100 times. You're trying to see like how many different answers it gets, and the most common of those often is going to be the right answer. And this is actually one of the ways that human beings reason through math problems as well. When you're working through a really hard math problem, and it's really crucial that you get the answer right, well, you'll try to solve it once and you'll get an answer, but you'll be like, I'm not sure about that answer. What if I try to solve it a completely different way? Do I still get the same answer? And that's actually a really big clue. If you have the same answer and try to solve it like two, three times different ways, that's a very big clue that you actually have the correct answer. And so that's actually one of the secrets to this approach that we're going to discuss called LMSI, which is you actually tell it, okay, you ask it the same question and tell it to reason through its answer 100 different times. And you imagine that the answer, especially with reasoning, that it's explicit about it, and it tells you what the reasoning is, that the most common answer out of those 100 probably is the right answer.
Okay. And is that the extent of it, basically? Like you have it, you know, test out 100 different answers, and then you pick the most common, and that's like, it's basically done some, is that self-improvement? I mean,
so what you do is, once you have that most common answer for that question, out of those like 100 examples, however many examples it is, you actually take the question and common answer, and you pair those up, and you can do this as many times as you have different questions, right? Because you don't need to give it an answer. You're actually trusting it to get its own answer.
Right.
And so what you're doing is, when you do that, you have those question, answer, question, answer, question, answer. That answer is not always going to be right, but it's going to be right the majority of the time now.
Most of the time.
Exactly. And what you do is you literally, the same way that originally you would train this model massively on the text on the internet, now you're training it just on those specific question answer pairs. You're training it on the data that it generated itself. And that's the self-improvement.
I see.
One way to think about it is, you know, let's say you're solving, you're trying to solve some, you know, it has to be a logic problem, right? That's actually that's crucial. This will not work with capital of Mongolia type questions, because what will happen is like, you'll just get the system guessing like randomly out of those 100 times. And maybe the most common guess will still be like very common, but it won't necessarily be right. It'll just be like, here's like what I thought it was. So it actually, it's very important that this is a logic-based and reasoning-based problem. And so if you're, you know, doing a bunch of math, right? Like, and you're, you have this like reason through step by step, and you have these questions and answers, and you train yourself through those questions and answers. Well, if you're smart, you'll eventually like learn to figure out the rules of math, like the kind of core rules of math that drive how things add together and that let you speed up your reasoning. So like, for example, if you are given a problem of like 2 + 3, let's think through step by step. And you're like, well, I start with like two things on the table, and then I add like another thing that's 3, and another thing that's 4, and another thing that's 5. Like that's like thinking through it step by step. And you do that over and over again. And then if you just are shown lists of those questions and answers that you yourself produced by like carefully thinking through, you're going to learn kind of higher level rules like, oh, carry the 1 when you add, you know, and like, oh, like there, it's like base 10 or like all these kind of basic rules. And so essentially, you're kind of doing like the hard reasoning up front a few times in order to train yourself to learn the higher level
rules. To spot the patterns.
Yeah, the higher level patterns that kind of hold across the whole set of things.
Okay. So we spent a while talking about like, you know, what this is. And I think that was especially important. It's unusual, but it's especially important for this thing because it's such a kind of in the weeds development, but it is a big development. We have AI effectively that now can improve itself without needing any external input, any fresh data, just based on what it knows, it can distill more knowledge from what it already knows. How far could this go?
It's very hard to say. It does take some external input in the form of questions, for what it's worth. Not the answers, but the questions.
Right.
You got to give it like, here's a question I might ask you, and let it think for itself. But I think it is a very significant development. This is the first time that I'm aware of that there's a path to this kind of self-improvement cycle where you could imagine not having a human in the loop at all. AIs improving AIs has been a thing over the last few months, but it's typically stuff like you'll have an AI that develops a really good matrix multiplication algorithm, and you can use that algorithm in like training future AIs, for example. It's like a one-off, like, yeah. Okay. Whereas this is much more, you know, you kind of close that loop and you don't necessarily, you know, you can imagine not needing a human in this loop at all. And in fact, the researchers experimented with this, which is like getting the AI to generate its own questions even. So literally, you need nothing. You just like, you wire it up to itself. You have like that meme of like the, you know, the electric cable like plugged into itself. And like, and here that actually works. Like you actually can get something for nothing.
Okay, so interesting, kind of as a theoretical development. I want to kind of make the rubber meet the road, so we have a little bit of time here to talk about procurement and then some of the risks that come with this. I mean, from a procurement standpoint, I guess one thing that this suggests, and you know, very easy to look at this and say, oh, it's a cutting edge AI development. It's not going to affect the average person, the average company, the average procurement cycle, blah, blah, blah. But of course, we know better than that now. We live in the post-GPT-3 era. The cutting edge of AI is going to be reflected in industry like within a matter of months, you know, let's say being generous, 12 months, but like it could be much sooner, certainly depending on the company. So what are some of the things that we could imagine this meaning for like in the next year, in the next 2 years, 3 years, for procurement? I'm wondering, for example, if we have products that effectively are self-improving, like we got to be able to test and evaluate these models. And that seems like it gets way harder. Like I got to be able to guarantee that my model's not going to fail in weird ways. And if the capabilities of that model are self-improving, then I can't really anticipate what use cases I might even put this thing to, right?
Yeah, basically it turns this into a moving target. And it also means something for just general acceleration of stuff, because it means that once you start from a certain baseline of capability, you actually don't necessarily need much or any external data, you actually can improve significantly just by like adding compute to it. In terms of the specifics of what this enables, the things that I see this touching on is stuff that requires heavy reasoning. So for example, like code generation models. So there's a few different code generation models now out there. There's Codex by OpenAI, which feeds into Copilot. Replit has Ghostwriter, and Salesforce has their code gen model as well. It's based off, I think. One of the challenges with code gen, right, has always been you're trying to get the model to, like, the AI to generate something that makes sense, right, that follows these rules of logic.
Right.
This is exactly the kind of thing that can turbocharge that entire process. And in fact, there's recently a lawsuit that got opened against Copilot to try to prevent Copilot or Codex from learning from this, from open source code, because that kind of reduces the value of developers, and it kind of takes arguably their open source code for use for this purpose. And now all of a sudden, okay, like there's this new approach that is just really good for reasoning, and where, hey, as long as you hit a particular baseline, you don't need any more open source code to like radically improve.
Right.
Like there's a threshold of knowledge beyond which, this is touching back on what we were talking about earlier, like for humans, how we can do this, but there's a threshold of knowledge beyond which you know enough almost about yourself, you know enough about the world to self-improve. And then you have kind of this escape velocity that you hit. And so maybe you need public coding data that developers have very kindly added to the internet, and that you're very kind of not selfishly, but I mean, well, selfishly somewhat, you're going to use that data to train your own models. But beyond a certain point, you don't need that data anymore. You don't need them to play nice with you because these models can self-improve. So pretty strategic shift in like that landscape. I also want to ask you, though, about malicious applications, this being another area that, you know, we're focusing on, obviously. So, like, obviously, this changes what it's possible for AI to do generally. I guess you could imagine automated cyber attacks becoming much more flexible and responsive in real time to challenges that they encounter. I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts on where that goes?
Yeah, I would say, like, one mundane example, right, would be spoofing like job interviews, right? Spoofing job interviews, spoofing like exams remotely, that kind of thing. It actually is possible now already to solve like late high school, early undergraduate level math problems with a really big language model that's been specifically, you know, trained to solve these kinds of problems. And actually well enough to beat the like high school students at these tests.
Yeah,
that is
possible. This is Minerva, right?
This is Minerva that came out a few months ago. That's right. And this actually, this LMSI technology, this is actually based on the same base model that Minerva was based on. But it's just this generalized like logic approach. And so I actually would imagine that it's possible to very significantly improve performance on these kinds of logic questions, which again is what we use to test like high schoolers, undergraduates in technical areas, like engineers, right? Physics, like this is legitimately like we used it to like test our best and brightest at this age. And it's also not unlike the kind of interview question you sometimes see in like a data science interview either. So like what happens
when 100%.
Yeah, what happens when an AI model, right, is able to like pass a data science interview? Like how messed up is that? And I mean this won't be something that's necessarily usable tomorrow because Palm is still internal to Google. It costs probably, you know, many millions or tens of millions of dollars to train it. It costs money. It's unwieldy, right? But at the same time, you look at like the time scale of proliferation on these systems, right? And it's like, well, you know, 12 months, 18 months, maybe 2 years is like all you've got before someone open sources it. And
yeah.
Look, I mean, to your point, GPT-3 is said to have cost something like $10 million to train once you factor in, you know, headcount and all that. Yeah, and time. And now today, you know, I've seen an estimate that if you were to do this, you know, retrain the same model today, you'd be looking at $50,000. And that's all thanks to improvements from hardware, from software, from you know, new libraries that have come out. Like the space moves so fast, the proliferation, like it's so easy to look at a breakthrough like this that, oh, well, it's just at Google. Well, you could have said the same thing about GPT-3 at OpenAI, like just over 2 years ago. And now, you know, now look how it's transformed the industry.
Yeah, that is a naive way to, that is a naive way to think about it. It's like, oh, it's just in Google. It's like, no, it's not going to be, it's not going to be that. And I think other malicious stuff, it's actually quite hard to predict, because when you're now, like, I would say that the variance in the risk is like just extremely, extremely unknown, because what's going on is like, you're getting a system that can bootstrap itself based on like just understanding, better understanding fundamental logic.
We
don't understand all the consequences of being extremely good at fundamental logic, because we're not even that good at it, right? So what happens when you have a system where you dial that up to 11, and this is like, you do get into like strategic capabilities. You do get into a system that can like start to genuinely, you know, do, apart from the code generation pieces and the interview spoofing stuff, which is like more mundane, but like, it's much more like, you know, what even is this going to be able to do?
Yeah, I mean, you just imagine a future version of this thing, more scaled. You know, at what point do you get to a point where you can ask it something like, "Hey, what's a good plan for like bringing down the power grid?" You know, like at a certain point, it collects enough knowledge. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but like if it has enough world knowledge, you know, depending on what data it's trained on, and then it has the logical capacity to put that knowledge together, and that's what we're talking about here, that logical capacity piece. Then, I mean, the sky's the limit. It becomes quite a concerning.
At that point, the biggest constraint becomes like, how long, like, can it hold? You know, how much of an attention span does it have? Because right now, these models are constrained by attention span. So if you know,
like the context window.
That's it. It's called a context window. So if the if the question you're asking it about the power grid, combined with the plan that it's trying to come up with how to like mess up the power grid, if that combined is longer than its attention span, which it may well be because this is a complicated plan to describe in words, then it is going to lose track and it's not going to do a good job. But yeah, stuff where you can compress it down into, you know, question plus answer is like a page or two, something around there, you're pretty safe. So this is pushing the capabilities of anything that kind of fits that description.
And that, of course, is today as context windows expand, which they have been doing very dramatically over the last several years, at least. That's also going to change. But cool. Okay, so let's talk last thing about accidents here. You know, I alluded to this when we were talking about procurement, that this idea that, you know, you get a new AI system, it's like this AI system can self-improve, it can make itself better, and therefore it can teach itself to perform functionally new tasks. Now, you know, from an accident risk standpoint, you know, if I'm sitting on the system and I want to use it for something useful, I kind of have to recharacterize it every time it's taught itself something new to make sure that knowledge is consistent with what I want it to be, that it's not creating plans that like make me go, oh, whoa, like, no, that you're like, yes, you're solving my problem, but like not in the way I want you to solve it. It's having maybe all kinds of side effects I don't want. I guess that's one issue, but more broadly, what do you see about the kind of accident overlap of this breakthrough?
Well, so I think that the way you put it just then is actually an extremely good point, because when you're training, like there's a qualitative difference. There's a big difference between training a system to be better at like, telling stories about like the desert or something like that, something specific there, and training it to be better at logical reasoning. Because if you're retraining your system to be better at like telling stories about the desert or whatever, then you can be pretty sure that you just need to if you want to recharacterize that system, you're like, I now need to know, you know, what new thing the system can do and characterize it for safety. You can be pretty sure that as long as you characterize the bits of it that are about like the desert or whatever, you'll have characterized the new thing that you've trained it to do. You'll have done a pretty good job of that. The problem is that logic is fundamental and it underpins absolutely everything. And a significant change in how it reasons can have major effects on what it says and how it performs across a vast vast variety of domains. And so if your job is like, I need to like characterize the system and make sure it behaves well in the distribution for safety, well, if you're retraining the system like this, all bets are off. Like you just have to go back completely to the drawing board, recharacterize the entire thing soup to nuts. Because again, it could have an insight that just utterly changes how it behaves in a wide variety of disparate contexts.
It sort of makes me think of, you know, if you look at the history of human thought, right? Like we went from Newton to Einstein. We had one picture with Newton of how gravity worked. And it was very simple and straightforward and allowed us to build a whole bunch of really useful crap. And then Einstein came around and he was like, hey, I've got an insight here. And that insight just got completely changed the way that we thought about gravity. It meant that we all of a sudden could build GPS, and it meant that we revisited a lot of the things that we'd built before with fresh eyes and changed all the infrastructure we used to build those same things because they fundamentally relied on new insights and principles. And so, like, really, if you're going to safety-proof Newton's theory, if, you know, we have, like, 200 years, 300 years of experience with Newton's theory saying, hey, this is really safe. We have all kinds of procedures to make sure that new tools that we build are safe according to Newton's laws. And then we go, oh, no, there's this whole new set of laws, and we're going to start using the crap out of them. And by the way, like, this just happened last Wednesday, and we need to be fielding the system tomorrow. Like, this just like fundamentally changes the timelines, right?
That's a great analogy. You can't build the atom bomb from Newtonian mechanics,
right?
From Newtonian gravity. You can't build the atom bomb from that, right? But Einstein, like special relativity and general relativity, and some knowledge of atomics, which, like, again, it's like this very kind of like deep down, like, deep understanding, and in some cases it's pure logic in the special relativity case. It really was, if you look at how Einstein did it, it was just like him just thinking really hard about like, what would it be like if I rode on a beam of light? It wasn't really very experimentally driven. He just thought hard about it, and that unlocked,
it's a thought experiment.
That's a thought experiment, right? And that unlocked, you know, not long afterwards, it unlocked our ability to build like nuclear weapons. You sometimes can like that. Yeah, that stuff can just happen. Just thinking really hard sometimes has that effect.
So maybe this is a good note to wrap things up on, because it seems like you've just introduced an ingredient here that helps clarify what this system even is in the first place. It sounds like we're talking about an AI system that, like, for the first time has crossed a threshold of intelligence where it can perform thought experiments in some sense, where like it can do the kind of reasoning that goes into doing thought experiments. No new data, just thinking on its own, thinking about maybe possibilities. Obviously, we're anthropomorphizing a little bit here, but in any case, you know, and leading to new insights just by sitting on its own knowledge that pre-exists.
I think that's a really good way of putting it. You know, it's not exact, but like very, very close to say, yeah, this is an AI that can, for the first time, do thought experiments, write them down, and use that as a way to improve how it thinks in the future.
All right. Well, LMSI, your first thought experimenting AI system. I hope this has been useful for everybody. If you have comments, questions, whatever, please let us know. You can reach us on our website, gladstone.ai. You can also, if you're so inclined, please like, upvote, like, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff on the various podcast apps. We are all out there and we do appreciate it. And we'll catch you on the next one.